Okay, I'm Elena Pierpaoli, and I will speak about the power spectrum normalization, which fits well in the question that somebody asked at the end of the previous talk. Well, this is not okay. I prepared a list of estimates that came out recently about the value of sigma 8. This is specified for omega n equal 0.3. And here are some of the scaling relations. And as you can see, I sort of divided the estimates coming from four different probes. These are the lensing results that were abundant and are probably going to be very powerful in the next future. Here are the more, let's say, classical cluster abundance derivation. And then there are some work on the power spectra from 2DF and Sloan. And here is the SZ power spectrum that we heard about. So as you can see, they are all pretty different. And even just sticking to one probe, you have some scatter. That means that since in the end we would like to have one single number for sigma 8, each of us, each of the people working in this field should try to assess the question why there are these discrepancies. So each different probe can be subject to different systematic effect and so on. We talk about sigma 8, but each different probe is actually maybe probing slightly different scales. So, for example, the lensing people have a probe typically 1 to 4 megaparsec scale, so slightly smaller, and they can be affected by non-linear effects that are not well corrected for. Clusters, well, I will be extensively speaking about it. They may probe even larger scale than 8 megaparsec. So the galaxy surveys may have redshift corrections and then biases. This new method is very powerful, as you have heard, but since it's new, we still don't have probably very much the systematics very up and running, very well tested. So my work here, since we have done 1 year ago a job on the local abundance of galaxy cluster and the implication from the X-ray temperature function observation, I will try to talk about it and assess which are the possible effects that make our result maybe in disagreement with others. In particular, I will be comparing with this work, which is derived from the Rosalv-Deep cluster survey from the luminosity function. And the reason why I picked up this one is because at least the likelihood method that is involved is very, very similar, although there are some major differences. First of all, we use temperature and they use luminosity. Second, they have a deep survey, so they go up to redshift 1 point something, while ours is shallower, it's local. And the third is that although we have the same likelihood procedure, we had a different way of introducing the errors and the relevant errors. So that's why we wanted to compare and test our results together. Together with that, meanwhile, there were new results coming up and so on, so we tried to update, and I will comment on them, both on the side of the luminosity function and on the side of the temperature function. Okay. So I will speak about the temperature derived constraints, what we did, and some update and comparison with other people work. And then I will speak about the luminosity derived constraints. We made an estimate from the recent reflex luminosity function. We compared it with the previous one, and we made estimates of the error involved. Okay. So this is just the, for people that are not familiar with the subject, this is how the procedure works. You have clusters and you observe a particular property of the cluster, whether the luminosity or the X-ray temperature, and then you count the cluster, and for each cluster you associate a mass to the cluster derived from the observable that you have considered, and then you have this way you have a sort of experimental mass function, so you know how many clusters there are in that volume with a certain mass, and you compare it with the mass, with the theoretical mass function via likelihood procedure. So each of these steps can involve different choices. For example, even the theoretical mass function, there has been a lot of literature on these subjects just in the last year, right? And I won't speak much about this fact because this is quite settled. I will speak more about this and about the comparison between temperature and luminosity work. So we did a work a year ago that updated previous results in the sense that we used a better mass function. We constructed, most of all, we constructed a new cluster sample that contained about three times the cluster that the previous samples used for this kind of probe were containing. And we used the likelihood method that could exploit the whole shape of the mass function, let's say, of the N of KT, and not only the integrated one, as previous work. And, well, we generalized it for general curvature, and we did a quite careful analysis of the error. And in the whole procedure, I want to stress the fact that we used this scaling relation that is derived from theory and decided to normalize it with what simulations were suggesting at that time. And this turns out to be one of the crucial points. Okay. So this is our sample. We have a nominal flux cut. We must say that we didn't go out and observe. We just took a ROSAT sample and added some Beppo Sachs and made a compilation of whatever was available. We decided to cut in redshift and in temperature because we didn't want low temperature cluster to be in our sample because of the scaling relation not obeying the law that I showed you before. So we have basically clusters that are by all means in our sample, and other that are nominally out, but because of the fact of the error in their temperature may scatter in the likelihood procedure, and one should take that into account. Okay, so we have this red line. This is the plot from 2001. We were sort of consistent with whatever was available at that time, and then we checked, if you only consider a high temperature cluster or if you only consider a low Z cluster or high Z cluster, how much does this result vary? All right. The main point there is that in the assessment of the error that may be caused by the error in the matter temperature normalization or in the temperature of the single cluster, the big game was played by the matter temperature normalization. And we showed that if we chose beta equal 1.3, at that time observations were suggesting even lower values of beta, but this would be the trend, so you would have a bit scatter in the normalization. After this, a few months later, Celia came out with a paper suggesting that if we took the new observational normalization for mass temperature relation, derived from some people in Germany, like Finogenov also, we would get beta, that, even higher values of beta, and therefore a lower normalization. And this is why in the table at the beginning, he gets much lower results. But this is not the only, this doesn't solve our life. I mean, this doesn't solve all of our problems. The thing is that if even the temperature determination for the cluster may imply different results. For example, this guy, Aikibi, he derived the temperature from some of the clusters that we also use, and we adopted the temperature measured by David White, who made a modeling of the ASCA temperature profiles with some decision for the cooling correction. While this guy made a different decision, and he claims that he has much tighter error bars, and most of all that the David White temperature are overestimated, especially for the high temperature cluster. So this Aikibi, he's part of a big group in Germany, and they also built their own catalog. And in fact, some of these clusters are in this catalog that is called HyFlux. So in order to test for systematics, what we did is we took his catalog, we took this HyFlux catalog, we took his temperature, Aikibi temperature, and his luminosity temperature normalization that is involved in the decision of the flux limit cut. And we played the same game as we did with our catalog. And this is what you obtain. You see that for omega m equal 0.3, you get quite lower sigma 8. So this could be another effect. Then we thought, well, he doesn't have the cluster that can scatter in. So let's see if we add the cluster that are in our sample and are not in his sample, what would happen. And what I found was that roughly you push omega m to higher value and the sigma 8 value is a little bit higher. But this is just to show you sort of the order of magnitude of the possible effects. Okay. All right. Here there is a technical issue. We realized also in comparing with the Borgani et al. Paper, I told you that they have a different way of introducing the error in the mass function. So we checked for that at this point. What we do basically is equivalent to say that we compute a likelihood that also depends on the matter temperature normalization, and then we marginalize over the error that we assume on the matter temperature normalization. And this is the red lines that we get compared to no error to the mass temperature relation that we see like with the shallow green thing. He does something different. He assumes that there is some intrinsic scattering in the mass temperature, and therefore, for every mass he considers, he convolves the mass function with the window function that has the spread of the mass temperature, mass luminosity, let's say, uncertainty. If we did that game, we would get a much lower result, right? So while doing just the marginalization, we simply broadened our error bars. So in some sense, the conclusion with respect to his work is that this kind of effect is playing a big role, especially because in his game, he is connecting luminosity to mass via the temperature. So he's using two scaling relations, luminosity to temperature and then temperature to mass. And for the mass temperature relation, he used the normalization that would actually imply a higher value than ours. So the way of introducing the error is essential. And it's not clear whether you should do the one thing or the other, right? Okay. Now, I will speak briefly about these L-derived constraints. These are the dotted contours are the one that Borgagni et al. Derived from the deep cluster survey. In order to compare with our local sample, we decided to adopt the reflex luminosity survey, which is for a sample of cluster closer to us. It gets up to Z equal 0.3. We only had the bin spectrum for it, and so somehow maybe less information. I know that they published something, the reflex people also published something recently on the subject. So we did what we could with the bin spectrum. And these are the likelihood contour that we find if we adopt for the reflex catalog the same procedure that was applied to the RDCS, that is luminosity, temperature, temperature, mass, with about 45% error global in the total scaling relation. It must be stressed that this 45% came out, the major contribution to this 45% is actually due to the luminosity temperature relation and not to the mass temperature relation. Nevertheless, it's quite, they seem to stick one on top of the other. So if there is something wrong with the luminosity derived constraints, I don't think it's with the observation, it's really more with the procedure, I mean, that one is using. The alternative for the assessment of the error is to use directly a luminosity mass relation. And so these guys, Reitrich and Böhringer, it's always the same German group, they made, they took a sample of ROSAT cluster and they made an estimate of the masses of the cluster looking at the surface brightness. And this is what they get, and they give fitting formulas for this value. And we try to match it with the mass temperature conversion, the previous conversion, and we get a beta that is equal to 1.7. You can see that, I mean, this is still a big scatter, and it must be said that if you do this game, you don't gain much, because at the end, the scatter that you have for the luminosity mass relation is still about 40%. So these are these plots just show what happens playing with this luminosity mass relation. These are the contours for if you use one fitting formula, so the luminosity mass fitted formula, or the inverse one, mass luminosity. Here is what you would get if you used the double scaling relation, mass temperature, temperature, luminosity. And most of all, this is what you would have if you shrink the error bars of the luminosity mass relation. Again, you see that the value of sigma 8 is pushed up. So after all this exercise, this is what I learned. So if you thought that there is some physical explanation for the luminosity and temperature derived constraints, I think that there is no evidence for it. It's more really the systematics and still probably the error on the quantities. And it's essential the way the scaling, the error on the scaling relation is introduced. And it would be good to have a better derived luminosity mass relation and have that under control. But the luminosity people have the advantage that they have, like if they apply the same method, they get the same results no matter the sample that they use, while the temperature people are still sort of deciding, I mean, we find differences with respect to the high flux catalog, and we shouldn't somehow, so we have to understand that better. And we probably will have better estimates on these issues when we will be able to probe the temperature profiles of the clusters better and model them better, as well as simulation that mesh with the observation in the sense that they include all the relevant physics and can really reproduce what we see. So I don't know if this is going to ever be precision cosmology, but I think that there is still work to be done in this field, and especially on the experimental side, I think at this point, and in the way data are treated. Finish.
Thank you.
Well, it's a combination of the three. Like, with respect to Celia, he actually took our temperature integrated function and fitted it. So the only difference is the mass temperature normalization. With these other guys, I think yes, it's difficult to say because they use a complicated. In their paper, they use a complicated way of comparing things, but. I think that the temperature is the main point. With the luminosity derived, I think the mass temperature normalization has nothing to do because it would actually go in the other direction. They should get a higher normalization than what we get. But it's this convolution, this way of introducing the error that they have and that we do differently that implies the result.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that because every time somebody asks that, but since this time he's here, right? Where is he?
it's from the pure I think it's from the cosmic that we would have to the velocity. Yeah. That's too high. We think it's due to a small scale power that we don't have to take into account. So you shouldn't do that.
Okay.